conservative legal advocacy and you know, advocating for various things related to the Supreme Court. So he's very deep in the kind of political world and specifically the world of conservative legal politics.
And says that the greatest threat is Marxism. Is that right, Justin?
Yeah, and he didn't agree to interview to an interview with us, but he gave an interview recently in which he said his greatest fear is Marxism.
Well, we're going to leave it there. As you write in ProPublica, soon after Crow met Thomas 3 decades ago, he began lavishing the justice with gifts, including a $19,000 Bible that belonged to Frederick Douglass. Justin Elliott, we'll link to your ProPublica report, Clarence Thomas and the Billionaire. A very happy birthday to Matt Ely. I'm Amy Goodman. Tune in to democracynow.org. Thanks so much for joining us.
This is KBOO Portland, volunteer-powered community radio.
During the last 6 weeks, you heard the special programming of our winter fundraising drive. Thank you for supporting Volume 2 of the All Thrills, No Frills campaign. KBOO is on course to exceed our goal of $17,000 as the final checks come through the mail. If you haven't already, get your limited edition Bluegrass Marathon t-shirt. Please go to kboo.fm/bgshirt. This design was created by a volunteer creator from Music from the True Vine, which airs every Saturday at 9 a.m. Don't wait. Get yours now. Go to kboo.fm/bgshirt. Again, thank you for supporting your community radio, KBOO FM.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. This is The Gap. My name is Tammy, and with me is Althea.
Hi, good morning. People, we're back.
We are back.
It's been a minute. We're sorry. You know, life happens, but we're happy to be here with you now. How you doing, Tammy?
I'm doing well. I slept well.
That's good.
I'm here. I'm focused.
Yeah.
I feel so much sharper.
Yeah.
Like, I went from being like a trapezoid to a rectangle.
Sort of, you know, mush those angles into being 90 degrees. Wow.
Filling them out.
Yeah.
How about you?
I'm feeling good. I'm feeling a little ASMR, unintentional, yeah. But I don't have the words. I only have the snaps. But yes, this is The Gap on KBOO Portland Friday Talk Radio. What are we doing? We're bridging the gap, filling it in. Generational gap, you know, whatever kind of gaps in our understanding, that's what we're here to talk about. We like to do a two-parter show, so in the first half of the show, we'll do interviews or we will do a news roundup. We've been gone for a while, so we got a lot to chat to you about, so we'll be talking local news today. And then in our second half, that's our call-in community question. So you, the listener, can turn Alchemy-like into a caller and talk to us about our community question around 8:30, so look forward to that.
I don't know if we did like body snatch or body switching because you're talking about alchemy and stuff now. I got to get something else to talk. I like it. Switching it around. Lots of cool, interesting developments.
Yeah.
Nothing too new. Just, I guess, a lot of updates, actually, now that I'm looking at all the contents, which I love because, you know, we can't. That's why local journalism and local media and local everything matters, because we aren't kind of parachuting in and then leaving and like, goodbye, pick up the pieces.
Thread the needle, you know? Mm-hmm. You got to sew a whole hem. You can't tie one knot and hope that your fabric doesn't come apart. Does that metaphor work?
And now you're going with the metaphor. Well, I love it. I don't know what is happening. I'm here for it. The metaphors, the alchemy, the algorithms. Get it.
Where do you want to go first with our stories for today?
We can start with a lot of things have happened while we were gone.
Yeah.
Between shootings and Trump being indicted or getting his indictments.
Yeah.
And apparently getting arrested.
Did you guys hear about that?
And now Mr. Clarence Thomas. I would love Frederick Douglass's Bible.
Yeah.
I was just telling
you. Yeah, what they were talking about on Democracy
Now!
That
sounds like a really cool present. But yeah, I guess the most relevant thing is the updates to measure, or excuse me, the what's going on with Measure 114, and because it also there's like the Franklin School walkout that happened also.
Yeah, so there was a student walkout this week to protest against gun violence. It happened across the U.S., but also including our students here in Portland. And so, right, Oregon's own Measure 114, which was related to gun control, has been held up in court since it got passed in November, both in a federal Second Amendment case and in a case in Harney County. Now, do you want me to go for the full thing of like what's going on in the state capitol? We are in our long legislative session right now in Oregon, so a good time to sort of keep your eye on Salem, but.
Yeah, I mean, there's for folks maybe forgot about one with all the things that have been happening, that is a measure that would limit the magazine capacity and would create a database and some more infrastructure for being able to actually obtain a gun, and the database would be stored with, was it the state or was it with the state police, right?
It was with state police, yeah. With that there's going to be a database for permits.
And that did not. That did pass in the midterms,
mm-hmm.
and now
mm-hmm.
it's been facing a lot of, and they said, we're going to sue, you can't do this.
Mm-hmm.
And so that right now is what Althea was mentioning is where we're at with it now.
Right. Yes. So the lawsuits are still in progress. And in the meantime, you know, no gun control is passed in Oregon. That is, none of it is in effect. It's all being held up by this court case. So in Salem, what Democrats in the Oregon Senate are working on is something called Senate Bill 348, which is in many ways identical to Measure 114. So they would both have the permit to purchase system, require that you get firearm training, and do that magazine capacity limit. So
10 rounds.
10 rounds, yeah, which the larger magazine capacity has been one of the things that has been contentious. So there's a couple of important differences with this law that's in the state legislature right now. One is that it would create a timeline for the permit system that would go into effect in July of 2024. One of the contentious things about implementing Measure 114 is that it had, I'm exaggerating, but like a 2-week turnaround to create a statewide database of gun owners and permits and firearm training. And so, you know, state police were like, hey, whoa, you want to put a law into effect and we don't even have the infrastructure. We can't build that in 2 weeks, right? So it gives that timeline. But the other interesting tidbit of it is that it would limit where in the state you can challenge the law. So it would say that you can only challenge it in Marion County, which is where Salem is located. And this is because state Democrats were saying that, you know, the people who wanted to sue for this law were kind of forum shopping around the state to go to rural Harney County to find a judge that they felt would be sympathetic to
it. Less densely populated, which happened to be less dense population.
Less densely populated. There was a judge there that would find value in their claims. So this would basically restrict, kind of like put a line around all of that stuff for them. At the end of the day, you know, with any of these court cases, if it's in Marion County, if it's in Harney County, it ends up at the State Court of Appeals. So like they funnel up to the same place, but it is kind of an interesting strategy. And there's a couple other pieces of legislation in Salem related to gun control as well. One that could raise the purchase age to 21. Oh, the other thing, sorry, about that bill I was talking about just a second ago, it would actually repeal Measure 114, which makes the Harney County case moot. Like, it doesn't exist anymore because they were just going to delete the law and replace it with an identical law, mm-hmm. but that says you can't have a court case over there anymore. Interesting. Now, that's politics.
I was
going to
say, that is very that's very political.
That's politics. Yeah. That's maneuvering. You know?
I'm just like, that sounds fishy. Oh, right, because it's politics.
Oh, right, because they're working on a particular outcome. But also in Salem right now, there's legislation considered to raise the purchase age to 21, ban and punish the ownership of untraceable guns, like kits that you can buy online or 3D printing, and then also one that would allow government agencies to ban guns on their property.
This is an interesting development, in light of what's been happening at schools and in the country, but also just specifically what's been happening locally in the schools. I think it hits home a lot more now, you know, and I think that they'll be hard pressed to find supporters, you know.
Yeah,
because it's just been so.
To like be against it, you mean?
Yeah. To oppose SB the Senate Bill 348, which will be, should we say substituting Measure 114? Or you
think
that's
substituting? Repeal and Replace has a bad kind of.
That sounds like a great album name, though.
Well, it has a bad vibe because of
repeal
the
repeal and repress.
Well, I mean, when I say it, it makes me think of, like. The Trump years where they were like, we're going to get rid of Obamacare and we're going to replace it.
Oh, sure, yeah.
And then they never did. So it doesn't have a great connotation. But I guess if you were going to be sympathetic to it, it is that the exact language, Measure 114, passed the state. Like, actual majority of Oregonians who vote said that that's what they wanted, you know? And so that's, and your state legislators are empowered to make laws. Anyway.
Speaking of laws, we can move. Speaking of laws and packaging and measures, check up on the charter reform.
Yeah. So the Mercury published this week a sort of breakdown of what is going on in the charter reform makeover. Fans of the show know that Tammy and I are pretty excited about this governmental change. But now we're looking at, 20 months left to pull this together. And would you believe that changing your entire system of government in the city takes a lot of work? There's a few different commissions going on. One of the interesting things is that they kind of have to redo the entire voting software and then also get that approved by the federal government to make sure it's Voting Rights Act compliant. So there's technical stuff like that. There's a commission to decide how much city councilors, the mayor, and city administrators would be paid in future election or in future, you know, governmental cycles. There's a districting committee because, as we know, for the first time, Portland, like every other major city, will now have districts that your city councilors are actually responsible to. So there's a commission to draw those lines. And everybody's kind of having to work at breakneck speed to try to get this ready for 2024, for that election, to be ready to roll and bring in this this new system of government. And, you know, as much as city leaders were like, yeah, the system of government sucks, we should totally change it, when they saw what the Charter Commission came up with, they're like, but like this,
surprise, surprise.
Yeah. Like, I'm not going to be as powerful. But maybe we should just, what if hypothetically we didn't? You know, I said we should, but what if we didn't?
I think, didn't like Ted Wheeler say something alluding to that? It's like, I don't know, this is a lot of work.
Wheeler's like, I mean, I hope we can get it done.
I don't know. It's in this Mercury article. They're kind of laying out the progress, and there's a part about the physical location of City Hall literally being too small for this incoming new government, hopefully.
Yeah.
There'll be just a lot more people because there'll be a lot more representation. So that just all these things kind of coming into effect and people finding creative ways to problem solve has been really good.
Mm-hmm. Problem solve, really, but also excited. Get in the way of it.
I was just gonna say, problem solve because it's easy to not be creative.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah,
and it's easy to crush creativity, and it's easy to like fearmonger because things haven't been done before.
Right,
you know. And even before this, people were saying things are so bad we can't change the way that the government is.
Right,
like, wait a second, what?
Hang on, rewind.
Yeah, that doesn't make, you know, and. Yeah, so I'm really excited just to see the progress in the community involvement and who's going to be running and the city administrator. And there is involvement with the city auditor, so I'm...
Yeah, the city auditor, Simone Reedy, has kind of been going off lately. I don't know if you've tuned into her good work at City Council.
Well, we've been talking about how on the show we've mentioned it seems like some folks are getting in the way of good people trying to do their work, you know?
Yeah, certainly.
Or, excuse me, people trying to do good work.
Yes.
Pardon me.
Yes. I just want to mention here, related to the charter reform, some things to, you know, look on the horizon, especially at the end of the summer
some
here.
Deadlines.
Yes. In July, there will be 8 public hearings for the new district maps, with 2 in each proposed district. I believe the text of the measure is to divide the city into 4 districts, basically. So look out later in the summer to figure out what part of the city you may be in, what new district. In August, that is when the Salary Commission is going to come back and adopt, basically, here's the going rate to be city councilor. In September, that's when the maps are going to be finalized. And, you know, they got to lock all that down so people have time to run. You know, if you're thinking like, well, I hope I can run for city council, you don't even know what district you're in yet. You don't even know how much you would get paid to work for the city. So that is stuff that they're going to lock down by this September, which I mean, that feels quick for me, obviously.
Yeah, from September and then November, that's...
November of the next year, we're gonna use it all.
Yeah, yeah. That's...
There's... So anyway, it's a good read.
They can do it. Yeah, you can do it.
I believe that it is possible, and that, you know... I don't know. I'm excited about it. I'm impressed, and I laud my fellow Portlanders who are on these volunteer commissions, you know, working their tails off to make this happen.
For sure. It's cool to see change happen in your lifetime.
Oh, that's another thing I wanted to say. Totally that. And also just that, like, you know, whenever there's elections, there's like all this energy around this good thing is going to happen now that we passed this.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think oftentimes there's like a disconnect from the result.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes that's because it's bound up in legal trouble or mm-hmm. it takes a while to implement. One thing that I think of is the Police Accountability Commission that was passed in 2020. Like, we haven't gotten to see that fully realized yet. So there's a lot of things that's like, yes, we enacted change, but the change hasn't gone into action yet. So it's good to keep an eye on and remember that the gears are still turning.
For sure. In the spirit of updates, I guess there's been an update. We have a little update from the, what is it, Office of Civic...
Community and Civic. I was saying it backwards yesterday.
Oh my God, I didn't even see this picture. Why did they post this one?
It's
so hard.
It's a good photo. Like, if I was the photographer, I would feel proud of it. We're looking at a Willamette Week article called Office of Civic Life Looks to Reroute $500,000 from 5 Nonprofits to Neighborhood-Based Grants. Important context about those 5 nonprofits, they primarily serve BIPOC community, and so they're going to yank that money away and give it to neighborhood associations.
Who are notoriously known for being nothing but advocates
for
Black and Indigenous.
Sort of equitable organizations that are devoted to change. Right, and definitely not, you know, NIMBYism or whatever.
And I don't want to make this happen. It's in a vacuum. When last time we were here, do you remember what had happened? Because there was the director of this department, and they felt like they couldn't do the work that they needed to do because of, you know,
a certain
commissioner,
a certain commissioner with the last name Ryan.
And then all of a sudden, 2 first names, and then all of a sudden, this Fakakta thing is happening. Like, I'm like, don't cuss. It's really offensive, and I'm really confused about why this would happen. And it's things like ARCO and the Immigrant Refugee Community Organization, Urban League Latina Network,
United Oregon, and NAYA. Yeah,
like these are like the classic like community that's like, you know, like where Kibu goes to for, you know, like this is
you want to see people doing stuff.
Yeah, you want to see people doing stuff. That's where you go to see it. But I don't.
And can I also say, people and these organizations obviously like have a hand in a lot of different areas. Multiple of these are like doing housing related work that the city refuses to do. NAYA, mm-hmm. Urban League, just opened. Anyway, go ahead. Sorry. I just get, it just makes me more angry when I think about what is the work that is being effectively defunded by the city to give to neighborhood associations. Let me read you a quote here. So right, Dan Ryan has handed this bureau and says that he's going to revitalize neighborhood associations. This shift of the money is likely to be controversial. The last two city commissioners to oversee civic life prior to Dan Ryan, Chloe U. Daly and Joanne Hardesty, both weakened the bureau's emphasis on neighborhood associations, pointing out they had long been criticized for wielding outsized influence at City Hall and for excluding minority communities. But when Wheeler handed Commissioner Ryan the embattled bureau earlier this year, he made it clear he would work to strengthen neighborhood associations again. In parentheses, civic life has been notoriously dysfunctional. A 2021 audit described a culture of bullying and mismanagement in the bureau. The director also just stepped down recently. Cutting funding for these civic engagement projects for those groups that we're talking about, and doing a small grants program for neighborhoods to request funding.
And apparently when the ED for United Oregon met with Dan Ryan, this is a quote, "We met with Commissioner Ryan on March 10th. With our program staff and in his office, made no mention of any potential cuts to programming." Like, really? You know, that's so rude. That's just setting people up to lose constantly. And it goes again to, remember, this is exactly what, you remember I was saying, more and more, more things are going to come out of City Hall, and we're going to see, now that Joanne Hardesty isn't there, that there isn't going to be, like, the one vote against the fakakta stuff that they're doing, you know? And this is like, why would you do this? This wasn't, what was problematic about,
A big chunk of change. And this article in Willamette Week talks about budget cuts and that a lot of what civic life was doing has been, like, parted out to other bureaus. Obviously, by 2024, it's getting a full overhaul. But that this isn't about a budget cut. It isn't like, hey, sorry, we can't give, you know, through this program, we can't help out these organizations. It's like, actually, we just decided to yank that away from you and give it to nondescript neighborhood association projects.
God bless Sophie Peel and the work that she does over there. There is a part at the end of the article mentioning TJ
McHugh
as the interim director, who also spent years as a marketing executive for companies like Nike and Macy's, and just when he thought it was scandalous, and ran Ryan's re-election campaign last year.
Yeah. Sounds like, yeah.
And he's in Ryan's office as a director of special projects.
Yeah. I don't know. I know that this isn't, like, explicitly the vibe of what's going on, but it kind of, like, reminds me of back in 2020. You and I had, like, hours-long conversations in the summer of 2020 about all the stuff with the Postal Service, where they're like, can you believe the Postal Service isn't profitable? It's like, yeah, I can believe it.
To tell me these stamps aren't worth millions?
First of all, the price of stamps has gone up, okay?
You gotta get the forevers.
But, like, it's like, okay, it's not... we're funding things. It's nonprofit. It's like we're doing things that are good. Just good doesn't mean capitalism, you know, making money. I'm sorry, I'm not even putting together full sentences, but that's just like what I'm getting from this.
Sometimes I don't know why I do this to myself, but I sometimes in articles I look at the comments, which is really not a, you know, it's because it just gets me so infuriated. But also it's good to know, you know, people have, you know, if they commented, that means they want their opinions out there. And, you know, if they put your opinions out there, I'm going to judge them, because that's what...
God,
that's
I scrolled down.
Yeah, that's the sermon, I guess.
But there's a part about
Portland nonprofits being in effect. I'm like, I'm going to blast this person. And taxpayers' money and all this. Okay, again, like going as in to say, why are these nonprofits not profitable? It's like, well, it's in the name. But there's this part you're talking about... Where is it? Putting money in something that might help improve the livability of Portland might be Dan Ryan's one good idea. Dan Ryan was the housing commissioner before this. What are you talking about? Like, he's not like
he's had a lot of.
He's not the spring chicken that's just coming out. He's not your AOC guy. Like, what are you talking about?
No.
Just this Fuck off. I got nothing else.
I'm going to caution against scrolling down. There's a lot of stuff that will rot your brain. The most marginalized group in Portland in the last few years are employed homeowning families that pay Multnomah County taxes and attend PPS. Yes, reparations in the form of returning the thousands of dollars in this taxes this marginalized and vulnerable group was forced to pay.
Are they being, no, they're being facetious.
I don't think that they are. I think they are co-opting language.
For my own sake, I'm going to have to think that
they're
being
facetious. Actually, I think all of this is satire and sarcasm.
All of it, yes. that was the brain rot.
All right. Let's get out of the brain rot comment section.
We get one more story.
You hear me my angriest on this show when I'm like, and look what I heard them say about Portland on Twitter. It's brain rot. It's not good. I gotta cool it. Anyway, which one do you want to talk about?
This guy really thought that Dan Ryan is just coming out and I don't know. This guy might have a thing. What do you mean? You see the situation?
What are you feeling? What sounds good to you?
I mean, the payouts sound like a positive way of ending the news roundhouse.
Roundhouse kick of news to your face. Street Roots reporting this week from Piper McDaniel. I got to interview her for the newscast on Wednesday, talking about the total cost of the PPB protest response in 2020. The claims payout is currently over $2.8 million. And a lot of these are still coming down, and that's only quantifying the payouts that are over $5,000. Mm-hmm. Those are the ones that city council has to pay. Any of them that are less than that, for your average run-of-the-mill police brutality, is not even tabulated in that number yet. There's some jarring tables, I would say, in this article that are kind of outlining these bodily injury complaints. But over half of that money, I think $1.7 million, just goes to legal fees. It's not even, and that's the city's and the plaintiff's legal fees. So not even going towards remedy for the people who were harmed, but just paying to litigate it.
So if you wanted to go back to the
people in the comment section that we're getting angry about, talk about taxpayer money. You know what I mean? Talk about people's resources, whether it's coming from business taxes or you as the, you know, the, your taxes that you pay. Like, it is this is still city money being paid out for something that didn't need to happen. Mm. Not that the payouts didn't need to happen, not that the restitution didn't need to happen, but that the police brutality didn't need to happen. So talk about wasting taxpayer funds. In that scenario, I hope explained it well.
I think so. Yes, as I appreciate what you did there. Ooh, this is this chart here is really it's pretty detailed, as in like the incident description, and it's a little hard to imagine, but also not, because you know we saw what you're here in 2020,
we were paying attention then too, you know, and that it's not. It's not over. It's still happening. Mm-hmm. There's still, you know, an enormous amount of, there's still lawsuits coming down the pipeline, you know. There's 35, I believe, that have been settled at this point. This article also talks about what are the changes that have been made as a result, right? And so there were some state-level stuff. There were some rewrites of the use of force code to say, like, hey, protesters have a First Amendment right, if you can believe that. And also the sort of legal argument that one person throwing something in a crowd does not give you license to use force on an entire crowd. Would you believe that a crowd and a person are two different things? Those are some of the changes that have been made in terms of police code, but obviously we haven't gotten to see those in action, I guess, yet. Still bickering with the Portland Police Association about implementing body cameras. That is now going to arbitration. We won't see the result of that settlement for a little while. Not necessarily a a happy story, but I think an important one in terms of, you know, accountability, right?
Did you see
transparency?
This, have you seen this lessons learned report that was published in April 2022?
I have not read the whole thing. No,
it's it's pretty interesting. It's like a report that the city. It's actually a Portland.gov website. Mm. I wonder if we can get someone to talk about this. This is just an interesting. Yeah, they're talking all about Minneapolis and all of that. Whoa, gotta get in that when I, get the chance. But that's an interesting thing. And they themselves, sorry, the point that I mentioned that is, A, it's an interesting read, but also, that in the spirit of accountability, how the city of Portland is taking accountability by, you know, at least even if you give that branding, you know, or have that rating and... It can be like, we know that we failed. So, you know, just to have that I don't say marking, but like that collective memory that's been installed and codified somewhere, you know, so that we don't forget. It's like,
forget.
Why, you know, it's like, you know, there's a reason why things don't happen in a vacuum and we have to, like, you know.
And it takes a long time.
Yeah, I was just thinking of all the people who had to keep this going and how it's like mm-hmm. years after, because it's like, years after the, you know, months after, you know, years after, people start, it's not that they lose interest, it's just there's so many influx of information that's constantly coming in, and good on folks for, you know, creating like a database and for doing the outreach and
there's just
2.8 million.
Well, and I think that, you know, our appetite for change, we need to remember that it needs to include an appetite for waiting. You know, and an appetite for being vigilant for transparency and accountability too, because that's also part of it.
Right, and like stay in the loop of things.
Yeah,
and it really can be. And I know that, you know, I say you got to stay in the loop, but you know how, if someone is asking, I definitely recommend if there's like an organization or something that you enjoy or you know, something like that, newsletters, you know, they try to tell them not to tell you. Shut them up.
Yep.
Get yourself on a newsletter, you'll know too much.
Uh-huh.
Just like different ways like that, so that, because it's, you know, could be hard because sometimes, you know, things run out of the news cycle, so but there's community-based organizations that are doing the work, so they are always looking for involvement. But
I say the one thing about the firefighters and the car washing?
That'll be your last.
That's all you get.
we're conflicted on this one. I say give the firefighters what they want.
Well, I'm not saying that it's bad. I just think it's kind of funny that in contract negotiations with the firefighters, basically the perk that firefighters get is getting to use the station as their personal car wash. From the article, quote, Mayor Ted Wheeler fumed over the decision to tack the car wash provision onto a larger overtime spending proposal, saying it sent a tone-deaf message to Portlanders, quote, it made this whole discussion in the eyes of the public almost farcical. Worries about optics. Rene Gonzalez is on board. City officials estimate the personal car wash perk for firefighters will cost taxpayers about $10,000 a year in total. And then there was this other quote from Wheeler saying, quote, there's a lot of ways because they're saying like, oh, to de-stress after a stressful job. Quote from Wheeler, there's a lot of ways I address my own mental health needs. I read, I work out, I take vigorous hikes. It doesn't have to be washing your car on the job. I just mostly think that it's funny. Guys, Ted Wheeler is vigorously hiking, okay? when you come to city council and you tell him off about, you know, brutality against the homeless people, he's gonna have to hike that off. So you think about that. How much does that cost the taxpayer?
On top of Mount Tabor or something.
Yeah, exactly. I like that he said vigorous.
I know, like he didn't have to.
He's like, for you, hiking is walking. For me, I'm working, okay? I bet he's got a camelback and he's like...
You think he's got those sticks?
Maybe he's probably got a walking stick and he's the kind of person like, on your left. Like, you better hustle.
You know what?
You better hustle, Ted.
I love the people who tell you when they're coming up on your left.
Yeah.
Good on them.
Can
and
I
it's
say
always people like like him.
Whenever somebody does that though, I immediately am like, left, right, up, down, where? And so I kind of like freeze and it makes it so much worse. But also if they say on your left, I hear left and I'm like, okay, go to the left. Anyway, maybe a conversation.
Oh, I can see that.
I mean, it's definitely like when it's a person walking or jogging, like the collision is not that bad. But it's like if it's a cyclist being like on your left, and I'm kind of like, what do I do? You know, the consequences can be worse. So maybe that's something to think about for the future. We need a better system to say, because I think the kitchen commands of like behind, corner, yeah, are pretty good, but that doesn't. I guess you can yell corner out in the street. Nobody's stopping you.
Coming up, hot on your left.
Mm.
I don't know. I have a hose. If the firefighter wants, and I live near a street, and the hose is long. So if someone wants to get their car
washed,
did
you guys need some? I heard the firefighters wanted help. Right?
Yeah. I'll get your kit not stuck in a tree.
You said don't worry about the taxpayers' money. I'm a taxpayer, and I'll give you this. I'll give you this water all the time.
I'll do it for. It's on me.
All right. This is The Gap on KBOO Portland. I'm Althea. I'm here with Tammy. We're going to take a quick musical break, and we'll come back for our community call-in segment.
And we are back here on The Gap for our community question, the time to get alchemized.
Whoa.
From root word alchemy to become more from a listener to a caller for our community question. 503-231-8187 is the phone number. But here's the question itself.
Yeah, talk to him.
You heard of tipping?
What?
Yeah, like the thing that you do, tipping culture, the thing that you do at a restaurant or at all sorts of places, mm-hmm, now. So there's been a lot of debates online about tipping culture and what's appropriate and what's not appropriate. And really, people are abuzz. So I have this little video. It's under a minute. That is two ladies talking about tipping. Mm-hmm. And just for context, they're a little bit older, so they're kind of comparing what it, quote unquote, used to be like, you know, before everything was automized and before we were using like Apple Pay and, mm-hmm, and doing all the thing with tapping cards and stuff. So, and I think that they've got some interesting insight. So here it is.
I've had it with what I see as a new trend of everyone wanting to be tipped all the time. So you're looking straight up at the person that you're tipping. So if you hit no tip, you're just a total.
That's right.
But it just seems ridiculous.
I went to a bakery to get some cookies the other day. It's her job to put the 6 cookies in a box, ring me up. She spins the little checkout thing around, and there's a tip on it.
It's outrageous.
Everywhere you go, it's all built in, this tip. And then you feel like this because I'm a huge believer in tipping.
If the only service you're doing is entering what I'm getting ready to buy in the computer that's pre-programmed, all you have to do is find spinach salad. I don't think that's a tippable action.
There it is.
Whoa. Okay, people, you want to call in? What do you think about tipping? Have things changed over time? Should we be tipping? Should we be tipping more? Should we stop tipping as a movement? 503.
What is worth tipping also?
What is worth tipping over? 503-231-8187.
I'd love to hear from especially folks who work in industries where they rely on tips and their opinions on that as well. Because I was back of the house. You were front of the house. Yeah. I'm not getting any tips.
Yeah.
And my hard work is what See, now I'm getting myself all worked up.
Right.
503-231-8187.
When I, one of my summer jobs was that I worked at the cafe at the zoo in Seattle, and we were not allowed to take tips.
Mm.
We were, like, not permitted. And there was, like, a secret cup inside a cup. Because sometimes people come to the zoo and you make them a delicious caramel mocha, and they want to give you an extra dollar.
Sure, sure.
So we would hide it in there and, like, split the $3 in change at the end of the day occasionally. And then, like, in some way, but we also didn't get, like, free staff meals. Like, that got done away with, like, the summer before I worked there. And there were also these concerts. So, like, the big incentive for concerts was that you could make tips. And people tipping on credit cards was, like, pretty lucrative. So it was more of an incentive to sort of stand out in the sun and give people water bottles.
I really hope they change their practices at the zoo.
I guess I can't speak to it. I don't even know if the same company is doing their catering. So, but the chicken chowder used to be really good.
There it
is. And their waffle fries. Dude, I got so addicted to waffle fries. Anyway, that's not what this is about. This is about tipping. What are we tipping for? How much should we be tipping? You know,
how much do you tip? I'll say it.
Tell me.
20% all the time.
20%, yeah. You're good like that.
Every time. if I get bad service, 30%. And they'll remember me, never get bad service again.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, one thing I can say that I'm proud of is that I can do the math in my head for 20% good. And so I'm not getting tripped up on that part. There are just certain things where I'm like, I don't know. Like, I bought movie tickets. I don't think I needed to tip you for that.
That's true.
I went to the movies last weekend, and it was like, we were like, oh yeah, two tickets, and they're like, do you want popcorn? And we're like, ah, sure. And then they give us popcorn, and they're like, okay, here you go. And it's like the tickets and the popcorn. It's like, I don't think that 15, 20, 25% was necessary on that one. That's no hate. Like, they're providing an important service.
We have April on the line. April, you're on the air.
Hi, I love the clip you guys started with. I am older too, and tipping has changed a lot. And I think a part of the reason we used to tip, at least part of the reason I used to tip for restaurant service, is because they're paid so terribly and such a big percentage of their wages are tips. And so I still mainly just tip for restaurant service. I will tip at a coffee shop or something if I get really good service. Like, I'm weird. I like to talk when I get my coffee, right?
Mm.
And so if the barista just like, yeah, and doesn't, you know, they're not going to get a tip.
Mm.
But, you know, if the barista is friendly, they're going to get a tip, because I know that's a hard thing too. I've worked service jobs most of my life, and I think because of that, both, I think more about when I'm going to tip, so I don't give tips a lot of times, but when I see that somebody's working really hard or they're trying, they do get a good tip, because I realize how hard service industry is.
Mm-hmm.
But I also think it sort of embarrasses some of the people who work places, like, you know, things that normally wouldn't have been tipped, like in a bakery or something like that. I've had an awful lot of people, when I look at the screen, it's like, I'm really startled that they're expecting a tip for that. And they're like, they reach over and they just press no tip for me. I mean, you know, I mean, they don't press no tip without asking me, but, you know, they say, well, you don't need to do that. Like, you know, you can just go on to the next screen. And so I sort of wonder if, I mean, I think a lot of people still do think about, well, these guys deserve a tip. But, you know,
right.
If you haven't gotten any service, they really don't. So I think it goes both ways, really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for sharing with us. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Good question.
Thank you.
Have a good one.
But
if other folks want to call, we're talking tips today. What are we tipping for? How much are we tipping? Should we be tipping at all? 503-231-8187.
I have my handy notebook because April brought me a lot of questions. First of all, yes, there are people who, I don't know how it is, but I remember when I started organizing, there are people that worked in restaurants that made like $2.80.
Yeah.
And they were, they're like tip workers. And it's like, that's not a thing. Like, you get I think there's a different word for that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I remember, like, you know, when we were still like battling for $15 an hour.
Oh my
When Bernie got a CD. Anyways, he said $15. He knew we needed more. I don't know why he got... But yeah, it got me, you know, that's true. If people are making like $2, you know, and they're relying on tips. I mean, that's on a lot of money. And also, I don't know, shouldn't at that point, like, the restaurant have to just pay better?
Right.
Like, I don't know.
And I think that I'm just, you know, conjecture here, but that it creates, it removes some of the relationship between the cost of doing business and the cost that things cost. So, you know, like, obviously, if you're at a restaurant, the price of, you know, your sandwich should be, you know, determined by the ingredients. How much are the ingredients?
Supply line.
Where do you get them? You know, supply line, stuff like that. And also the labor that it creates, that you need to create it, right? That's what it should be pegged to. Mm. But if those are artificially low because we're expecting some amount of customers to make up the labor cost with tips, that doesn't seem right to me.
It sounds like we're shareholders, like, you know, sounds more like stockholders than anything else. And also, how do you tip before you know what you actually get? Because April was saying, you know, you get like a good coffee and then you tip, but it's like, what about if your coffee isn't great, you know? And like you said, if like an afterwards thing. But yeah, it just anyways, we have Dante on the line. Dante, can you hear us?
Oh, hi. Yeah. Hey. Good to talk to you.
For sure. Yeah. You're on the air. We'd love to hear your opinion.
All right. Yeah, well, I just wanted to mention that the first thing that I thought of when you started talking about the subject was cow tipping. You know, I'm not really sure why I live out here in Malala and I'm looking out at the field next door full of cows. So maybe that's it, but
don't
it was only
them.
For a fraction.
Don't tip them.
But anyway, no, I just... As far as the subject goes, I figure that, you know, I mean, everybody's worker, everybody are workers, and they need to make a living wage. And I figure, you know, the cost of the service, I mean, 15% at least. That's if this, you know, if it was just sort of average, but from there up as high as you want to tip. You know, that's kind of how I feel. And if it's a problem... Well, maybe you shouldn't go out that day or something, mm-hmm. I guess.
What do you think about the idea that, you know, if we got rid of tipping, would people not do as good at work because they wouldn't be working for a tip?
It's such an unlikely way for the capitalist system to work, I guess, because then they would have to be paid... a living wage, which seems to be a problem for most employers.
It does seem to be a problem. You're right about that.
There it is coming in with
you know,
the
it's sons. A great idea, but I think so many things would need to change. And who knows? You've started the program. Al was talking about the changes in Portland, so who knows? I guess it might be possible.
That's true. Change is possible. I think we got to come to consensus first, but I appreciate you calling.
Okay, yeah, thanks. Good to hear you. Bye-bye.
For sure. Please don't tip those cows. that's if we're part of this, you know, some business owners, that we're all part of this together. You got to help with the tips. But I wonder, I mean, there's also tipping for when it's not just a restaurant, you know, like other types of tippings. And I've always wondered, like, you know, like if you get your car maintenance, do you like tip the person at the garage, like if they do an oil change?
When I first moved to Portland, is like, do you tip people who pump your gas for you?
I assume that you do.
I don't think you do.
Is this like a dollar or two? Is that not?
I mean, I doubt they would refuse you. I don't know. If other folks want to call in, if I've been doing it wrong for a long time, please give us a call.
Let us know.
503-231-8187. I think that the idea that, like, we have to keep tips so that people give good customer service, you know, I think that's bogus, especially because there are certain types of customers, not saying that you're one of those people, but, like, the type of person in a restaurant that's, like, holds up a $10 bill and they're like, this is your tip. Everything you do wrong, I take a dollar away, you know? Like, that it is, like, you're giving people... like a weird weaponization of power when if they were just paying for the good and the service, it's just like, here's what it costs to get what you want. It's like, great, I paid the cost. There is no other like weird relationship between us at this point where you might dangle a dollar over my head and want me to dance, you know?
I get that. I never Yeah, I guess there's a good thing about just getting it out of the way, for lack of a better
word.
But
I think, but it's like, do you approach tipping as like, hey, I understand we're in a capitalist system that doesn't pay you a proper wage, and I want to appreciate the work that you've done for me in this moment with a tip? Or is it like, you dance for me, service worker?
I think there's some people who are like this and some people aren't. And we have David on there. David, can you hear us?
Oh, yeah, I'm here. Yeah, I just have a quick comment. Years ago, I noticed that the standard tipping rate went from 15% to 18.5%. It was tacked on automatically with large parties, et cetera, et cetera. And I always thought that was kind of fishy, because I always felt that tips would rise as the cost of the meal rose. And so to actually start making the tip actually higher with the percentage didn't make any sense to me. That's my comment.
Mm-hmm. Well, I appreciate it. I think that's a good little math problem for us to try to work out, right? Because if it's always 15%, then that is going to grow with however much your actual tab is.
Oh, I didn't think of that. But I love that.
Having
that
a
makes sense.
18% is a larger proportion of it. Anyway, thank you for calling.
You bet. Thanks. Bye.
Have a good one. If other folks want to get in on the conversation, 503-231-8187.
And we have Harry on the line. Harry, can you hear us?
Oh, yes.
Hey, greetings. How's it going?
Thank you. Yeah, thank you for taking my call. Yeah, isn't tipping a city in China?
Oh. Might have to spell that one for me.
you never heard of that joke before? Oh, the old joke.
That's new for me, then.
But anyway, also about tipping, since a lot of people are using credit cards and stuff, most people in the past, people tipped by cash. Mm-hmm. So, like at the cash register, there would be a tip jar, right? Mm-hmm. Do you still see tip jars anymore? You know, and also. If you rent a hotel or motel, do you tip the room service? There's a lot of people will put a dollar bill or $5 bill on the bed, so when they come in and they do it. So I think most of this tipping is because the employees don't make that much money, mm-hmm. And we kind of feel sorry, but now that we're becoming a cashless society, mm-hmm. It's kind of hard to tip. Before it was just, the meal is $27. I give them $30 and leave. round it off. Something like that. A lot of people tip that way, even though it might be less than 20% or 15%.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you, Harry. I appreciate it. I think the introduction of the idea of it being cashless is an important one. Appreciate you. Have a good one.
Okay, you too.
Thank you. I love hearing from all the folks. It's really putting things into perspective for me. And also, my mom does housekeeping, and she says $5 a day.
Mm.
That's how much you should tip.
That's good.
Yeah.
File that info away.
Boom, there it is. and we have Jessica on the line. Jessica, can you hear us?
Yes.
You are on the air. We'd love to hear your opinion.
Well, I was just thinking about this. I mean, I've worked in the service industry, too. And some of the places where I see them implement the tip system the best are where you bus your own table often, or in establishments that maybe are in better off neighborhoods. But, when I think about the lowest paid people in the food service industry, like, my mind goes to farm workers, and like, we never tipped them, and they went above and beyond during COVID, during environmental disasters, during like bad air quality. We never tip them. Mm-hmm. And that's just on my mind today.
I appreciate that. Well, and I think because so much of it goes to visibility, right?
Exactly.
Well, I appreciate you calling. Thank you so much.
Thanks.
All right. Have a good day.
You
Bye-bye.
Too.
There it is. I'm telling you, putting things into perspective.
Yeah.
Bringing that in. Thank you so much for calling that in, because that is...
right.
Like you said, the visibility.
Like the politicking is like, does tipping in the front of house go to back of house? Not does it go all the way down the line of us all being
back of the house, and
back
the back,
of the house
back
to
yeah.
the you know, the farm where everything is coming from.
Okay, we have, let's see, I see the button that I broke last time is still broken.
Oh, good.
But we should have Ian on the line. Ian, can you hear us?
Hello.
Hey, Hi. How's it going?
You're on the air.
Oh, well, you know, I wanted to congratulate you on bringing up gas station attendants, because I've always thought, would you rather be a gas station attendant out in the rain and the cold, or would you rather be a service in a restaurant where there's good food, it's warm and friendly people and stuff? I always thought tip gas station attendants, and I think that's a good thing we need to think about.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, the other thing is that they're exposed to a lot of hazardous mm-hmm. fumes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that too, yeah.
It's a hazardous job. Okay.
So I like your show. Thank you.
Thank you. I may have to reform my thinking around this.
Well, if we don't have the conversation, how will we know?
Yeah.
Let's see. I'm trying to see, who do I have next? I think this is Francis. Should be Francis. Are you on the air with us?
Hi.
There it
how
is.
How are you?
Doing good. How 20%. Are you doing?
20%.
20%. 20%. 20%.
Yeah.
Yep.
And if farm workers should be paid more money
mm-hmm.
for their labor. And the everybody should, actually. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think it's a shame that if you work 40 hours a week, minimum wage, you can't afford an apartment in the city. You mm-hmm. cannot. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's ridiculous. If you're working 40 hours a week, you should be getting a living wage.
Yeah.
And as far as the staying in a hotel or whatever, I think what somebody's mom said is about right. I try to leave at least $5 when I leave, if I just stay overnight. But mm-hmm. if you're there a week, then, you know, maybe it should be $20 or something like that. Yeah. You know, it just depends on how long you stay. But as a rule, I do 20%.
20%.
There it is.
Yeah, and that's where how people make their living. Then if you use your debit card, you can put the bill on the debit card and give the server cash. You can do that. That's
yeah,
okay.
That's true. Well, thank you, Francis. Appreciate
Take
you.
Take care.
Have a good one. I think this is also good information for, I mean, I'll say me being a younger person that like, I mean, I haven't stayed in a lot of hotels solo. Like, there's a lot of avenues of like that there's a culture around tipping that's like, oh gosh, I'm being rude and I don't even know, just because that wasn't necessarily a practice that was like passed
down.
You
don't know.
To me.
Yeah. You don't know what you don't know, as
they
say.
You don't know what you don't know.
And we have, I think, is this Doug on the line?
Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Hey. Hi, this is Ian.
Ian, sorry. Oh, I guess that was Doug before. He didn't correct me. That's fine, though. How's it going, Ian?
That's all right. I was talking while he was talking, getting very confused. I'm with you all. I don't think that tipping should be a reflection of the service you provide or that's provided to you. You know, every worker has a right to give whatever service they want, especially, you know, I've worked in the food service industry, and I don't always feel like working excessively hard, but I always tip 20%. But I'm kind of the mind that I think a society without tipping, and one where workers can work to, you know, get the full value of their labor from their bosses, instead of a tipping society where there's an unequal relationship between the person that's mm-hmm. buying and the person that's giving the goods. I'd much rather see folks just get what they deserve instead of having to feel like they got to serve somebody.
Mm-hmm. That's true. That's a really good point. It's that, like, that unequal balance.
Exactly.
Not fair, yeah. Well, thank you for putting that also into perspective for us, Ian.
All right, thank you all.
You take care.
Have a good one. What a robust discussion we've had.
Well, folks, we're not even halfway close. Hopefully,
oh gosh, okay.
I can get...
We can maybe squeeze in one more?
We can get, let's see, John, are you with us?
Yeah.
There
yeah,
you
I am with you, thank you. Yeah, he was right, what he said. And I want to point out that there's a two-layer system going on. There's a lot of businesses and working as a non-tipping system, and then there's this other tipping system that's like a side thing, and it's an American thing, right? Canadians don't tip, Europeans don't tip. It's a like a vestige of a capitalistic weirdness, I think.
Yeah.
And it's not right. Because in the construction industry, we make $35 an hour or whatever.
Right.
But we don't rely on the customer tipping us to make up the difference in our paycheck, and nobody ought to have to.
Right. Well, I think it's interesting that tipping is not, maybe previously tipping was considered more like, oh, well, here's a reward for going above and beyond. And now it is more
No, it's to make up for a deficiency in the system.
Yeah. And that that responsibility gets you know, transferred
on. The responsibility, isn't that always what it's about?
Yeah.
Externalize the costs.
So they'll say it takes a village is what they'll say.
Yeah, and if you're a raider, hey, they made a village. Let's raid it.
Yeah,
there it is. Well, we thank you so much,
thank
John.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Appreciate you. Maybe we could take the rest of the calls off the air. Hopefully,
if folks want to
hang around.
I think that was the last one. They gave up.
Danielle
but it's okay.
sent a message saying, "I have never figured out tipping by a haircutting person."
Oh,
no, I think it's 20.
Listen, as I was doing research for this, there was hairstylists have everyone has shared their opinion, and also yes, there's definitely that point that this is a vestige of like the British colonialism that America tried to break free of, and we have like literally 30 seconds.
Well, thank you everybody for listening. This has been The Gap. I'm Althea. Tammy's been here with me. We really appreciate the conversation as usual. And also thank you to everybody who supported us in our last membership drive. Find all of our episodes at kbu.fm/thegap. Follow us on Instagram at The Gap Radio. Thank you so much for listening.
Happy Friday.
See you next week.
Bye.
Bye.
You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Lady Sings the Blues, a tribute to Billie Holiday 2023. On Saturday, April 8th, from 8 p.m. to 10:45 p.m. at the Alberta Rose Theater in Portland. The 16th annual Billie Holiday Tribute brings together musicians of many genres to pay tribute to influential jazz singer and songwriter Billie Holiday. Performances feature Marsha Hocker, LaRonda Steele, Arietta Ward, and more. Again, that's the 16th annual Billie Holiday Tribute Night, Lady Sings the Blues, on Saturday, April 8th, from 8 p.m. to 10:45 p.m. at the Alberta Rose Theater, 3000 Northeast Alberta Street in Portland. More information